Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We are here with a very special guest, Paul Browning. Paul Browning is an investigator over 20 years in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome, Paul. Are you with me?
Doing good. Oh, yeah. Doing good.
So we'll just kind of jump into your history a little bit, Paul, and talk a little bit about you. Tell me a little bit about what got you started in the paranormal and what you do for a living.
Well, let's see. You know, as a teenager, I think a lot of us go through a lot of phases and whatnot. And paranormal, you know, there's so many different aspects to it. There's different parts that I thought were interesting. But the real key for me was when I had a passing grandparent. A lot of stuff started happening immediately upon his passing and things I couldn't explain. That went on for several days, but it took root immediately after he passed. So, of course, in my mind, I kind of was connecting dots, and I thought it was really interesting. But, you know, back in, I'll say around 1984, 5 maybe, We didn't have television programs. We didn't have all this popular stuff they got now. And so I didn't think that it was even really possible for me to pursue any kind of route into looking into this stuff and seeing, you know, just exactly if I can figure out what this is. But years go by, and of course, eventually I'm channel surfing, and like probably about, I don't know, 4/5 of all the people out there in the field right now, we saw these people looked like a black and white television program, and they were in the dark with flashlights and looking for ghosts. And so I thought, well, I guess you don't have to have degrees and all this other stuff, which, you know, of course it could help. But it looked like the everyman could get into this stuff. And so that was it for me. I just started buying books and learning as much as I can about a lot of the things that was going on at that time. And so it just kind of snowballed from there.
So in the many years of doing investigations, I'm sure you've done all kinds of things over Nashville and all across the United States of America. Tell us a little bit about your adventures and what you've seen and the realities of the paranormal.
Oh, my. Let's see. And way back now, I do want to clarify, I do not have 20 years of experience in the field. I jumped in at about, 2005-ish, somewhere around there. But living up here in Clarksville, Tennessee, I'm north of Nashville. I got into the field to try and, you know, see if I could come up with different things that, you know, the people were claiming that they saw on television programs. And I think this is a big circle that happens a lot. We get a lot of people that join the rest of us out in the field, and they tend to use what they see on television. And I found out very quickly that a lot of this stuff doesn't hold up. But I will say that along the lines of learning things in the paranormal, you have to have a lot of patience. You have to have a lot of money. You have to be willing to understand that what you may think is happening may not be happening. That the fallacy that everyone believes that you can go to 3 haunted locations and experience 3 haunted things isn't necessarily going to happen either. There's a large time investment. There's long periods of time away from your family if you're really serious about it. And there's a lot of criticism from your peers and your coworkers. But over this length of time, there are times where I've encountered things that I have real difficulties explaining. And what I wanted to tell you was that a lot of people tend to take different routes when they get into the field. They may pursue their work using the scientific methodologies, you know, or technology-based is more what I want to call it, because really the science of it is so much more critical. But everybody gets, you know, everybody uses the technologies and stuff. Then you've got the psychic approach, and some teams blend those two. But I decided to do something completely different. I decided to take what I called the psychological approach. And it works with a little bit of an assumption, and that is that I'm already dealing with another human mind that may exist, or consciousness that may exist, without a body. Now, again, that's an assumption, because I've never been able to prove a lot of this stuff. You know, everybody goes on those assumptions. But the methods that I used have at least shown me, in a couple of instances, with witnesses, stuff that I can't explain. So, the other real advantage to this is you're using an approach that doesn't require a lot in the way of hardware, because a lot of people, as you know, come into the field and they don't have a whole lot to go on. You get your digital recorder, you know, you may have a video recorder, your audio recorder, your, you know, the least expensive of the things, but the staple pieces a lot of people start out with. But,
excuse me. Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I've seen a lot of investigators throughout the years, including myself, actually, when I started in the audio. You really don't have a lot of money to spend on this stuff, so you kind of tag along with other people and filling in the gaps when you can and buying what you can and doing what you can with what you have.
Absolutely. I think everybody goes through this, and this is one of the cycles of the field, because we see people come into the field. Sometimes they last. Sometimes they say, you know what, this is as far as I've gotten, as far as I'll get, and I think I'm kind of done. So as people leave and more people come in, this cycle is never ending. I've learned it just continues. It just continues.
I've got a bit of a cough now, here today, so I apologize if I cough on you a little bit.
You know, that's so ironic, because I've been dealing with a tickle cough myself, and it's annoying, so I'm kind of surprised I'm not doing it myself.
It's that time of year, I think, definitely. Well, I know that you spent a lot of time educating people on the do's and don'ts of the paranormal and the common misconceptions, I guess you could say, things along those lines, which happens all the time. We see it on Facebook every day, but let's talk about that a little bit. Tell me a little bit about the common misconceptions that people have and the reality that we run into.
Oh, some of the more popular ones were like, the orbs are ghosts. Everybody can go out and buy their, you know, $5 camera, take a picture, and all of us that have been in the field forever, we've just somehow been hoodwinked and didn't know that, you know, that's all it took. I think a lot of people think that because you have a photograph that may have something you can't explain in it, they're confusing the paranormal with the unexplained. And what I mean by that is, just because you may not have an answer for that anomaly on your photograph does not necessarily mean you can rule out someone else may not have the answer for that. And so I tend to lean towards other people, you know, lean on them for their help and their expertise in identifying a lot of things that are in photographs. And to be honest, I hate photographs, because it's one slice of one moment in time. We don't know what happened the minute, the second before, or the minute, the second after. And so we have to make a judgment call based on one slice, frozen moment in time. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that can become mushroomed out of something that could quite very well be something common, but that we can't see it because, for whatever reason, that moment snapped, makes it look like it's something it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. I tend to talk all the time. Well, I'm sure you've probably seen that from time to time. I tend to talk all the time when people show photographs online and tell them that there are multiple different situations that could occur. So in order to develop the whole picture, you literally have to be there, or they're going to have to provide multiple different forms of evidence and so forth, because an image is just an image. And as we all know, when you're dealing with digital cameras, that advances to the point where it happens so quickly. Like you said, you can't really see what happened before that, what happened after that, the experiences around that, or the other things you may catch.
right, absolutely. You know, and in the process of trying to understand what's going on and everything, sometimes there's a lot of hurt feelings, and you know, and the hardcore people that are insistent upon, you know, I've got the $1 million photograph, and it's unfortunate, because I've learned that over time, I don't have quite as much patience to go through 500 people's photographs and to explain to them, you know, what's going on. It's really not. They're not really looking for the answer. Most people are wanting you to just say it's a ghost, and I just can't do that.
Well, that's I think that's every common investigator, that, like you said, that have been in it for a while. You learn that the odds of catching that gold image, that holy grail, so to speak, of evidence is almost implausible. I mean, we all search for it, but reality is 99% of the time and above, we never find it. We find some interesting things, have some experiences, see a lot of different things out there, things you can't explain. But it's not as easy as, like you said, going out there and, oh, look, I have a video camera and I have a picture camera and, gosh, I caught a ghost.
Right, exactly. You know, and audio is such a fickle thing because everybody that gets out there, I've been with other teams and other groups, you know, always, you know, offer up any kind of help that I got. But one of the common things that I see happening is people will split up and they'll go to different areas of the house. Everybody's doing EVP sessions, and it's like, I can hear the group in the other room. And you know that when they play their audio back, they'll go, that wasn't us in this room. And they forget that the sound was carrying from another room. And again, you know, you point that out, and then we get into arguments, and then you're thinking, you know, how do you guys double check your audio? What methods do you use to double cross check? You know, stuff like that. And if you don't have any form of cross checking or contamination control or some kind of an environmental control that's going to, you know, sidestep a lot of this stuff that can create false positives and a bunch of arguments. You know, it's just something they got to look out for that I think a lot of people lack and still need. There's a lot of critical thinking I don't see enough of. But, you know, myself, I don't consider myself to be the be-all, end-all. I am nothing along those lines. I'm just somebody who I have such a high level of, you know, what I believe is going to, you know, if it was going to be something legitimate, I'm going to peel the onion till you almost have no onion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's crucial, though, when you're doing investigation, the debunking and the paying attention to every little detail. Too many people like to scream ghost and demon and a half a dozen other things, and the reality is I've tagged along on myself, and you've probably done 10 times more, at least 20 or 30 investigations with different investigators. And I would say most of the time when I tagged along with them, and I learned a lot from them, because I'm not an investigator myself, they're explainable, you know, from dust to critters in the walls to common creaks in old houses to, believe it or not, at one point or another, a carryover from a television from one house to another because the house was so close. And somebody actually thought that they had an EVP, and turned out, nope, not an EVP. We could match it with a commercial that was going on at the exact same time.
How about that? You even get your television in the afterlife. Imagine that. I did want to say, I know that a lot of the things that I worked on when I was taking what I consider to be a psychological approach, I did at a single location because I wanted, and I really feel this is how things are. If I were able to prove that the location that I was doing my work in was haunted, it's going to take a lot of work, you know, technology, a lot of methodologies, a lot of patience. And I really feel, this is how I feel now, this is hard to prove, but I really feel that if a location is actually haunted, that over time you can build a somewhat trusting relationship between both parties in the sense that I really feel if we look at things from the opposite side of things, like if I were to become the person I'm looking for and get into a mindset of someone who may still reside at a location, who may say, okay, I've got these people in my house now. Why do I even want to fool with these people? Why are they here that I didn't invite them? You know, and you proceed from that point. And a lot of the methods that I devised was things that I felt would raise levels of curiosity and actually draw any kind of activity out in the form of, you know, interest and curiosity. And in the end, it's paid off a few times.
Well, that's very interesting, actually, to hear somebody that takes the logical approach. I'm sure you know, when you're looking at all the investigators and all the people out there, too many people claim to debunk and look at the logical approach, but then you see some of the stuff that's submitted and you're going, okay, yeah, I know that you really want that ghost and I know you really want to catch that image, because we all do, but sure. But the reality is what I'm looking at I can explain, which means virtually anybody else could.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny when you bring up the notion of, you know, the photograph or anything like that. In all my time, in all my field time, the number of photographs and video I've obtained in what I would consider to be 100% proof that I would be willing to stand behind over this entire length of time that I've done this work, I have zero pictures and video. Because I will not stand behind something unless I know it's airtight. And to be honest, I don't know what it is. I have ideas, but whatever it is either doesn't want to be seen or picked up, or maybe there's something involved in whatever it is that they're composed of that will not show up on film. But in any event, I don't have any of that. I've seen it. I've had witnesses with me, and we've seen stuff that defies explanation and really leaves you scratching your head and wondering how the world works, but none of it on film or video.
You know, and it's really amazing when that's the case, because I know I've had that situation. I bet every investigator I've ever talked to says the same thing. It is almost kind of amazing. It's like the moment the camera's off, something's going to happen. The moment the camera's in the opposite direction, something's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. You know, 10 rooms in the house, 9 cameras, the activity's in the 10th room.
That's no surprise at all. In fact, I've seen some unusual things from even things flying across a room that you can't really explain. And ironically, it happens right after the camera's either in another room or aimed in another area.
Right. It's frustrating, but I think at a certain length of time, you begin to understand this seems to be just something you're just going to have to deal with. And you know, you can't just, you're not just going to get it. They're going to make you work for it.
So let's dive into some of those experiences that you didn't get on camera. Tell us a little bit more of the spooky times that you've had, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Okay. Believe it or not, I didn't actually include this particular method that I was using in my book. It was one of those things where I was going to add more to it a little later. But this was the most recent thing that I'm definitely going to add to the book. You know, one of the things that I've learned is that we pay attention to a lot of stuff, you know, as not only as investigators, but just as people in general. Well, I was visiting a location and noticed that a family of 3 people had already shown up at this particular location. I didn't know they were going to be here. And the man in charge of the location says they'd like to spend time with me. And I said, okay, that's fine, but I don't normally do this, but I'll go ahead and overlook this. So he tells me there was a time. This one of these people I'm left with, he says, you know, I was at this location, and I was trying to do some ghost hunting, and, you know, we were just kind of sitting around, me and these other 2 guys, and we had these, you know, these camcorders and stuff. We were taking time off. We were sitting in this room. Nobody was talking, and we decided to change out some batteries and things, and everybody was just kind of quiet, and I was just sitting in this chair looking down the hallway at a stairway. And I seen something dark come down the stairwell. You know, it's dark, and it's probably about 2 o'clock in the morning. And it just comes down slowly, and again, nobody's talking. It goes around the right into a room, into another adjoining room, into a doorway off to my right. And I'm watching it. It gets all the way up to me. And again, I haven't said a word. He said, and then I moved, and I said, I had the strong urge to say hello. And when I did, this thing took off, you know, went in a reverse direction, followed its path completely, and took off back up the stairs. I said, that's all it did? He says, yeah. He says, but there was this other time I was trying to change out some audio and offload it to a computer. I was doing it for a lady that was with me. And we were just down in the, you know, the living room area, and I was working on things, and I could hear a kind of a bumping noise going on upstairs. He says, well, you know, first time I heard it, I thought, no big deal, it's probably the house settling. Then it did it again. He said the third time it did it, I hollered upstairs, you know, you keep that up and I'm coming up there, and, you know, kind of laughed it off. Well, it did it again. So the guy said, I ran up the stairs. By the time I got to the top of the stairs, there was this big black shadow, and it rushed me. It came after me. He said, I froze. It went through me. I was cold. He said it was all I could do to get down the stairs and get out of that building. He said, now, the third time I was there, what was it he was telling me? He said there was a time where he was working on something, and it was just the common thing I'm getting at here is the man was doing stuff where there was a little bit of noise level, but nobody was talking, and they were experiencing things. Okay? He says, I don't understand what's going on. The thing rushed me on the stairs. He said, all we were doing was changing out tapes. And I said, okay, well, that's giving me an idea. And so I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk and carry on. And, you know, it's about 11:30 at night. We're just going to carry on and talk and just kind of be kind of loud. Not belligerent, but just kind of loud. We did this for a little while. And probably after about 30 minutes of doing it, I said, okay, listen, this is what I want to do. And I called a huddle. I said, let's try this. I want each one of you to make a sound that lasts about 5 seconds long. But I want each one of you to wait between each sound about a half a minute. No talking. Make your 5 second sound. Wait a half minute. The next person goes. They make their sound. Not the same sound. Change the sounds up. I don't care what it is. Knock on a wall. You know? Laugh. You know? Tap a table. I don't care. But just 5 seconds long and we'll go around the room. By the time we got around the room the first time, this black shadow come rushing into the room right in front of my face. It was less than 2 feet away from me, and it was about 3.5 foot tall. I stood there looking at it. The room, everybody noticed it, but there was a young lady in the room who let out a gasp, and this thing flew off down the hallway away from us.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's something I think that most people would be excited to see. It's a shame you couldn't catch it on camera, but that's it doesn't want to be caught on camera.
No, we had a camcorder aimed down the hallway. It came and traveled down through, and not one frame of video shows anything on it.
You know, that's an amazing thing, too. Maybe these things just simply, as silly as this seems, move entirely too fast or in a level that cameras can't really catch them 99% of the time.
I think there's something to that.
Yeah, it would make sense. I know that personally from working on electronics for a number of years. Now, I don't have all of the ins and outs on it, but I know that cameras record at a specific speed to catch movement, right. Sound, audio, and so forth. So it could be plausible that these things are moving so fast that it's impossible to catch it.
Yeah. It's, you know, if it moves at the speed of thought, which would make sense if ghosts are actually disembodied, you know, consciousness and whatnot, moving at the speed of thought would make sense. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I once had an experience on something that didn't look like a ghost, but I still don't understand it. And I had one additional investigator that was with me. Still doesn't make sense. The best way I can describe this to you is, have you ever seen an old Disney flick that mixes live action with animated?
Uh-huh.
We went through this room late at night. We were using red lights. He was in front of me. As we walked through the room, he's shining the light across the room. Before we leave that room, there's a bed near the entrance. He waves his red flashlight across the bed and heads for the exit, and I'm about 3 steps behind him. As the light passes the bed, on the bed, and then past the bed, I watch this spot on a pillow turn red. I'm thinking, that's weird. So I told him, I said, hey, wait a minute, hold up. and he stops and he turns around and he sees the light. We go over to this pillow and it gets brighter, and then we see blue colors, and there's these things that look like flat 2D pinwheels about an inch in diameter. They're slowly spinning. There's a group of them. I don't understand what I'm looking at. I'm beginning to think there's like a projector under the bed or something. And they're spinning slowly in a clockwise fashion. They're in a cluster. One of them drifts towards us on our side of the bed, like it's coming apart from a collective. This makes no sense to me. So I start raising my hand up, trying to block any kind of light shining down from a ceiling, you know, any kind of way to expose this as some kind of weird prank. None of this makes sense. There's no what I consider to be a ghost involved or anything, but it's just weird because it's a red and turquoise colored spinning pinwheel that's 2D. It's flat. I start moving around the room to try and see if I can debunk this somehow. I told the other gentleman, keep your eye on it. Don't take your eyes off of it. So he's explaining to me the things that are going on while I'm running around the room trying to block the light. I fail miserably. These things not only look like they're inside the pillow when they begin, they come up and out of the material and are about an inch off of the material up in the air. So now he's telling me this stuff has actually come out of the pillow and it's in the air. He says, I don't know what I'm looking at. And whatever this one was that came to our side of the pillow has now gone back to the collective on the opposite side of the pillow. So we're checking everything, trying to figure out what's causing this. And these things start drifting towards the headboard and then up, not touching the headboard, up along the wall, not touching the wall, and they start slowly fading away while they're rotating and they're moving away from us. And again, we tore that bed apart. We looked at every feasible location you could possibly pull this off. Couldn't find it. And this is on a top floor of a three-story building. So you're going to have to bounce angles to make this stuff work. And it's just, we couldn't figure out how they pulled it off if they pranked us.
Huh. That's interesting. I'm losing my voice now. Boy, I'll tell you, I apologize. This is not my normal, but it's been a heck of a couple of weeks. We won't get into that a little bit, but let's talk about your book a little bit. Your book educates on the basics of the paranormal. I know I spent some time reading it. You sent it to me about 6-7 months ago. It was a very interesting book. So let's talk about that book a little bit and what made you decide to write it.
You know, when I got started in the paranormal, one of the things that I wanted, I had such a thirst for knowledge, I went out and bought every single book I could find on learning about doing the work. You know, there were a million paranormal 101 books. That's what I kind of call them. You know, the get your feet wet books, what you need, what you got to carry, what to look for, all that stuff. But I thought, why don't we have more? You know, how come there's no other book? And this is like 2007, 2008. And I'm thinking, well, I've read a few of these 101 books, and I noticed one of them had been self-published. And I thought, you know, maybe there's something in that. Maybe I can put together my experiences and the methods that I'm using to try and obtain some of this stuff, and I'll put it in a book. And then if somebody else can do it, and they have good results with it, well, awesome, that's great. It all became part of the let's share information age, you know. I wanted to see if what worked for me might work for other people. And so, again, with that psychological approach, I figured this is different, it's new, and people, you know, have a chance to use this stuff. But everything, well, more or less everything in that book, was all stuff that I had done at this same location where I told you about the two stories with those 2D-shaped pinwheels and the shadow that was about 3.5 foot tall that I managed to have come to me. I didn't even have to go look for it. But I thought, if you pass away, what would you keep? Would you keep any of your senses? And if you did, would you still react the way you did when you were alive? Because, you know, if you can move at the speed of thought, is there anything that you would be interested in still on the living side that might attract your attention? What would you notice? If there were lights on in the dark that you've seen every night while you were alive, But then in the dark, there's a new light. Would you want to find out what that is? Would you be curious enough to come look? And these became the kind of lures and techniques I used to try and draw something out and save me a whole lot of trouble of, you know, setting up all kinds of this, that, and the other that wasn't working.
Yeah, and that's kind of an ironic thing. I've noticed that within the past 3 or 4 years. I know it's common for ghost hunters to put up all the CCTVs in their rooms and the motion detectors and use the EMF detectors and so forth, and we'll get into some detail about EMF here in a little while. But you're right. It doesn't seem to be working. It sounds great, but it just doesn't seem to be catching anything.
Right. But, you know, like everything else, we're all going to try it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A little bit of a pause. You're listening to BBS Radio Station 2. I am your host for Paranormal Truth and Reality, Christopher Houston. We're on the line with Paul Browning, an investigator in Nashville, Tennessee. A couple of little simple events. If you're in the local Ohio area, don't forget to stop by the Marengo Flea Market every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. They will be having a Halloween event that I will be participating in and hopefully have some investigators out to educate the public on devices and how ghost hunting really works here in October. They're also going to have a family fun day September 15th, I do believe. It's going to have some nice fun things for the family, so support your local Ohio area. In addition, Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell will be having a live digital broadcast every week, including a digital radio station. Make sure you tune into them. I do believe Paranormal Journeys is going to be doing this every Wednesday if everything works out right. Additional information to keep in mind, Brian Cannell and several other people will be up at the Ohio Reformatory this year for Halloween to sign autographs. So make sure if you haven't got the tickets when the Ohio Reformatory opens up, do that. And support the Haunted Hoorah. Brent Stooksbury has spent a lot of time doing one of the largest haunted sites. As far as fun games, it's not really a haunted location, so to speak, but he does a nice little fun house every year and a scare to everybody. Last year was the zombie apocalypse. This year he's planning on advancing that a little bit to do some more common things in history, including clowns, if everything works out right. Well, let's get back into Paul here so that Paul can discuss a few things. I apologize for clearing my throat here, Paul, but let me get your opinion on EMF detectors. I know what my opinion is because I've worked in electronics for so many years, but I like to kind of educate everybody in the public on what these devices can do and how easy they are to trigger.
Oh my, yes, absolutely. I have this thing, this other misconception. You know, you were asking about misconceptions, and one of my not very favorite things are any kind of gadget that has some kind of blinky light and labeled as a ghost something or other, ghost catcher, ghost whatever. You know, a lot of people get these gadgets, and you said yourself you deal with electronics. When you're using this material, I think it's important that we know not only how it was built, how it operates, what its purpose is, why it should work. You know what I mean? This is the way people are spending their money out here. You know, hey, it's labeled ghost such and such. I want to use it. And, you know, when you talk about EMF, I know a lot of people think that EMF automatically means ghosts. What I think is smarter, rather than buying a K2 and watching a light blink that's affected, like you were saying, with lots of different interference and a lot of different other commonplace items like cell phones or two-way radios or things like that, I don't want to settle for a blinky light to tell me that's a ghost. Now, you might do it at the beginning and, you know, in your big, long journey of learning all about ghost hunting, but I want to know more. I want to be able to pick up whatever set that off. So, I try and use gadgets that will record waveforms of whatever those EMF hits are. I don't want to settle for a blinky light. I want to see what it is. How do I know that that wasn't some kind of a two-way radio setting it off, you know? And maybe by catching the waveform, it'll reveal a little bit more of what the source could have been. Now, as far as being a ghost, I don't know if EMF is really going to be where we're going to find an answer. You know, that's like, I could wonder how a disembodied voice communicates. Is it through some form of EMF? I don't know. You know, you don't even have a mouth anymore, so how does that work? But my opinion on EMF is I can't settle for a blinky light. It's got to be more. I want to see what it is. I just have to have that next step, and that's what I do.
Well, that makes perfect sense, actually. I like to do that with the audio field when you're talking about EVP. A lot of people catch the EVPs and that's it. But, you know, let's think about it a little bit. We know there's thousands of sounds out there. When you start getting into spirit boxes and ghost boxes and so forth, they're interesting. But, again, cycling through thousands and billions of different things, you're going to get a response. You're going to get something. And odds are you're going to get something that matches whatever you try not to match. Now, what I do think is very interesting is if you're getting all these sounds and you're getting all these names and you're getting everything else, and it, under all of that, you pick up 100% communication, which could happen technically, just like white noise. Hey, look, I've got nothing but noise on my TV. It's not connected to anything, and I'm hearing somebody talk to me. Well, if you can get a conversation going under all of that where the Bobs and the Joes and the Sams and the transfers and all this other stuff is gone, and you're getting static noise where you hear somebody going, hello, I can hear you, how are you? And you're talking back and forth to this thing, you might have something. But people don't look at that.
You end up with those reverse-built narratives where people connect the dots and try and make it work around what they think it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, somebody named Sarah died in this building 40 years ago, and I heard the name Sarah when I asked for a name. Well, you do know that billions and billions of broadcasts will also use the name Sarah every time you cycle.
You know, you bring up a good point, and a friend of mine had built a gadget that was recording different radio stations and performed the experiment by using a ghost box, recorded the session, and was getting everybody's opinion about things and what they thought they heard. And when he played back what he was using, everything that was heard through the box, he had recordings of the individual stations exactly linked to where that chunk of audio came from. And suddenly these people realized, well, this is supposed to be a ghost box. All we're doing is getting chunks of slivers of sound from radio stations. And people don't realize. I mean, you know, in electronics, if you're going to get some kind of a voice to come through some kind of radio, you got modulation, demodulation, you know, carrier waves, the whole thing. I don't think a ghost knows enough about all that technology to get that to conform to that and then bring it across.
Precisely. Yeah, and as silly as this seems, up at OSU University and several other universities, I showed this as a prime example. I took away all of the other things that you see in a ghost box, and all I did was take an old-fashioned stereo. You remember the old ones with the dial knob?
Oh, yeah.
You can go back and forth. And I took a TV, and I put one to the left, I put one to the right, and I said, now watch. I'm going to carry on a 30-minute conversation. And if you sit there and dial this back and forth and you use the basic questions that everybody uses, hello, are you there? Do you have a name? Do you have something you want to tell me? And you start leading with that. When you scan through those stations, you're going to get the answer. And you can do the same thing with the TV. Flip the TV station back and forth over and over and over again. Stop for about 2 seconds. Ask the question. Flip again. Stop for about 2 seconds. Ask the question. You'd be surprised how long you can carry on a conversation with the television.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know why there's so much faith put in that kind of stuff. And not to mention that, you know, when people have a lot of these ghost box sessions, you ever notice that you can hear words or bits or pieces, but if one person is picking, they're cherry-picking the answers. They're not talking about all the non-hits. They're talking about the 1 out of 100 that seems to conform to what they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's because, and I never downtread everybody looking, because it's great. We all start in a certain way, and we all look, and that's a wonderful thing to do. I think it's the ambition. The reality is we're all excited to catch something, and we all want to do it. We all want that golden, you know, that golden piece that goes, oh, my God, I'm confirming that everything I've ever seen is not in my head. And a lot of times people get really excited on this. Of course, you have the money grabbers and the attention grabbers and so forth that'll just throw everything up there. But sure. Most of it is just learning. You have to be able to step back and listen to people like yourself that have been doing it and other investigators that I think are amazing. That's why I don't claim to be an investigator myself. I'm consistently learning. I'm consistently tagging along. I'm consistently asking the questions and listening because that's how you learn. I mean, it's just like going to college.
Right. Nobody is there yet. Like you said, we're all in this trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. And it's amazing how much you can learn from the people that are specializing in photography, the people that specialize in audio, the people that just specialize in everything like yourself that, hey, look, I want to figure out a scientific method of doing this. I want to figure out a logical way of doing this because I don't want to keep repeating the same thing over and over again.
Right. And let's not forget, everybody that's in this field should also realize that equal or even more time should be spent on ways to gain environmental control through the use of motion sensors, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you got clients that pull stunts on you. You've got, you know, people that come and go in locations, transients. You never know. There's other factors that could come into play, but because they don't have these cross checks and these safeties and precautions in place, and that's why it's just as important when looking for this stuff to make sure that you've got our side covered before you look for the other side.
Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, I have a friend of mine that's an investigator. Now, he's in Colorado, actually, but he ran into a situation like that. He was very early on. His first 4 years, he thought he caught something, and he went back several times, and it turned out to be a transient, believe it or not.
Yeah.
He was sleeping underneath the building. There was this little old cellar that everybody had forgotten about, and it was virtually covered up. We found a way to kind of root himself in there and built himself a little home.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And I know it hurts when you think you've got it, and then something like this just kind of takes all the air out of it.
I actually got a kick out of it when it first happened to me. When I was first playing around with EVP, I had people like John Griffiths and Terry Rowe and a bunch of other people that were giving me keys because I'd been doing audio recordings for years. But doing audio recordings and looking for ghosts are totally different. And I went out on my first investigation, and I was recording, and I played it back. And I'm like, hey, guys, I got something. And the first comment that came out of one of their mouths when they looked through it is, you know this is a bird, right?
yeah. Oh, you know, you really hit on another good thing too, and that is when it comes to doing audio. One of the things that kind of grinds my gears a little bit, and it's all learning again, is somebody taking a sample. It sounds like a bird, but if you run these five filters, play it backwards, and listen to it underwater, you're going to hear a voice.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or some sort of strange sound that seems like a voice, and then all you have to do is put it out there and say, this is what it's saying. Now half the populace is going to have that in their mind. So when they play it back, they're going to hear it.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we did when we had a website is that we put what we called InvisoText. We'd ask what you think it is, listen to it, and then drag your mouse over the little area underneath, and it would reveal what we thought it was. So you could compare notes and keep that whole bias thing away.
That's actually a good idea. More people should do that. I like that. That's really interesting. Yeah. I think that that's one thing I always hated is when and I worked behind the scenes at a television show doing this for a little while, which is ironic. I hate it now, but it's ironic that I helped a couple of major shows do it. You know, you put up that EVP and then you put the words right above it.
Yes. No guesswork.
And obviously once that's there, people hear it, they're going, oh my God, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's like circling the picture. Hey, look over here. Don't you see the face? I put a circle around it. Well, the moment you say it's a face and you put the circle around it.
Yeah, cat's out of the bag.
Yep.
You know, that's so true, though. When investigators, instead of saying, what do you hear? Like you said, they'll address it as, well, do you hear Frankie wants a cheeseburger? You know, it's like, wait a minute, you blew it for me.
Yeah, and part of it, since you and you openly brought up the great subject, part of it is the fact that, you know, this is a 100% guessing game. There was no manual going into it when it started. There were a lot of universities trying to debunk a lot of things that still do and come up with some great stuff. There's still no learning manual. There's still no, hey, here's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. That's why I liked your book, believe it or not, because you took the time to say, I understand there's no learning manual, but hey, here's a little bit of a manual for people that on what I'm doing. Maybe this will help.
that was really it. It was, I wanted, you know, it gave me the opportunity to travel a little bit, share some things, share information, build some networks, and if there's some benefit of other people taking my ideas, ramping them, changing them, twisting them, adding to them, more power.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it's all about, really. And I think the paranormal is such a vast field that it goes beyond ghosts. It goes beyond religion. It goes beyond all of these things. I don't think people grasp that science is a part of the paranormal, because the paranormal in itself just means unknown as of yet.
Yes.
If we apply some of these things properly, it's a matter of working. Kind of like early research and study.
Yeah. But I think, honestly, and I think I may have even put this in the book, I think when it comes to getting to the answer, it's all baby steps. No one's just going to blow the lid off and run away with all the answers. I really think it's going to take a very large cumulative effort by a lot of people using, you know, a lot of different methodologies before we stumble upon whatever it takes to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Going to end up being, we stumbled across something else. It's kind of like when you're dealing. Are we still there?
I can hear you now. You keep fading in and out.
I apologize. I'm going to try to adjust this a little bit. I'm not sure what's going on here. There we go. Sorry about that, listeners. Can you hear me fine?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times when you're dealing with the unknown, you run across something that happened, if this makes sense, you run across something that happened 50 or 60 years ago. It's like the accident of building the atomic bomb, as an example. The atomic bomb was not brought together fully until somebody went, oops, and it blew up.
Right. It could have been something completely stumbling and unexpected, something that we weren't looking for, but we discovered along the way.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of what we're doing now will coexist with that somewhere along the line. If everybody works together, somebody might hit that golden key, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Roman did 20 years ago.
Yeah, you know, for all we know, there's somebody out looking for Bigfoot who's going to stumble upon something that said, you know, wow, we could find ghosts with this.
Yeah, absolutely. We can, you know, we've got it. Bam, there it is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about where we can find your book a little bit and find you a little bit in any events you may be participating in. I know every now and then you participate in some events up there on Halloween and so forth, so that people know where to find you.
Yeah. Well, let's see. You can find me online. I've got a domain name that I used to use. It was paulbrowning.net, but being as somebody has bought up all the Paul Browning dot so-and-so websites, I had to go to ClarksvilleParanormal.com. That's where you can get a hold of me. You can also get a hold of me on Facebook. Just do your standard search. You'll find me in there. I'm not hard to get a hold of. As far as events, I don't do too many events nowadays. I just kind of keep to myself, and I do a little consulting here and there, and And I work with a local group here that I hold in extremely high regard. I like their methods. I like how they handle their business. And so I try to make myself available whenever they, you know, they may need me.
Well, I mean, it's always one of those things. Events kind of are tough anyway. I know I've tried a few myself, and, you know, it's one of those things that it takes up a lot of time, a lot of effort. You either have people show, yeah, you don't have yeah. people show. It can be a real pain in the butt a little bit. So, But it's good to if any of the listeners haven't had a chance yet, make sure that you read Paul's book. It's very, very interesting. Gives you some key tips if you're a new investigator that are very useful, actually. And it'll give you some insight on an investigator from where they started from.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, again, you're listening to BBS Radio. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We've been speaking with Paul Browning. With October coming up, make sure you pay attention to your calendars. There's going to be a lot of events that are going on throughout the state of Ohio and other surrounding areas, from some pretty famous people all the way down to some of the less famous people that are just starting their careers in Amazon and so forth. In fact, Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell will be one of those. Joe Vitale will be one of those. Mike will be out there. You're going to have some pretty famous names that are signing on, things like Grant Wilson, and I do believe Jason Hawes is out. Week up here on BBS Radio. Add to the listeners.
I'm sorry.
Do you have any last requests that your last segment you want to add to the listeners there?
Oh, just you know, if you need information or whatnot, you know, I did mention that you could get the book from the website. There's an order link on there if you're interested in that. You kept going in and out again on me, so I was getting bits and pieces. Sorry about that. But I think that's it. Basically, you know, just do what you can, learn what you can, and keep going.
Beautiful. Well, I think we will go ahead and we've got maybe roughly a minute and a half left, so we'll go ahead and end it there since it's been a delight talking to you, and I've had a bit of an audio issue. I apologize to you and the listeners, Paul. I'll rectify that by the next situation. I think my mic's finally deciding to give out on me here, but I've got a new audio mic that I'll plug right in the in the next session. But you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. Christopher Houston is your host, Paul Browning as the guest. He's been a delightful guest. You're always welcome to come back, Paul, and talk in the paranormal. The truth should always be that reality. So we'll talk to you next week.